Good morning. Hope you're having a wonderful Memorial Day. Thanks for tuning in to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The surge in crime this spring in Baltimore draws attention to all shootings, and especially fatal shootings. The city's homicide statistic is 40% higher than this time last year. The Western District has seen more homicides so far this year than it did for all of 2014. Murder stats are central to public discussions about safety, policing, violence, and even economic development. So we're revisiting a conversation we had 3 months ago, dissecting how homicide numbers, zealously reported by the media, shape how we think about our neighborhoods, communities, and the people who live in them. In February, we spoke with David Kennedy, director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. He started the program Ceasefire, which aims to reduce violence in inner cities. And Janetta Churchill joined us in the studio. She's a research associate at the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. I asked Janetta Churchill what her research says about what other trends show up in communities and individual neighborhoods with high homicide numbers.
Well, often when you're hearing crime statistics, specifically homicide, they're looking at the count for Baltimore City as a whole. But we know that homicide is not evenly distributed across the city. It seems to really be focused in some neighborhoods, and it has a disproportionate impact in certain neighborhoods. In 2013, certain neighborhoods had over 10 homicides in them, and that has a very strong impact on the integrity of a neighborhood. When you look at the cumulative impact of not only the homicides, but other types of crime, poverty, poor housing, low education, unemployment, and unequal access to services, that really takes a toll on the stability of a neighborhood.
Well, are you saying that that in your research, the homicide statistics tend to drive some of those other things, or that they coexist with those other?
I would not say that it's causal, but they do coexist. In Baltimore City, we tend to see the same patterns happening over and over, whether it's poverty or unemployment. There are certain parts of the city that have some negative outcomes.
David Kennedy, Baltimore has focused on homicide statistics in particular as crucial to public safety. Should city residents see murder numbers as a barometer for public safety of all city residents?
Public safety is one of those irreducible requirements for basic civic community health. A community that isn't safe and where people don't feel safe cannot function as a community. So we'd better be counting it and we'd better be tracking it right. But to go back to something Janetta just said, and to be much less sophisticated about it than she just was, these days across the country, not just in Baltimore, you really don't see high levels of gun violence and that kind of public violent crime except in deeply disadvantaged African American communities. And the concentration is just extraordinary. The Baltimore conversation has for a long time been, are we above or below 200? And I understand that, and you need a way to capture this. But the national homicide rate right now in Baltimore, as part of that, is about 4 per 100,000 in the population every year. In certain sorts of neighborhoods, like Baltimore's high crime neighborhoods, the young black men in those neighborhoods will experience homicide rates above 500 per 100,000 every year. And if you add non-fatal gun woundings, it'll go up as high as 3,000 per 100,000 every year, which means about 1 in 30 young men are being shot and killed every year. The cumulative impact of that on the community can hardly be described.
But it seems as if you're both talking about that it's a very community-specific impact as opposed to a citywide impact.
So the immediate harm falls on individuals, it spreads to their families, it spreads to their communities, and even though on a population basis the number of people that end up dead every year may seem small statistically, it is not small in the life of the community. And it's really not small in the life of a city like Baltimore. What ripples out from it has essentially no boundaries. we look at these neighborhoods where a few people are at extraordinary risk and we say, ah, these are dangerous communities. People on the outside start saying, you know, these are bad places full of bad people. People don't want to go there. People who live in them feel shunned by the rest of the community. They don't really feel part of the city. Those communities get policed at a very high level, and people get stopped and arrested and prosecuted in Baltimore, driven by the violence. The last time anybody did the special analysis, at any given moment, if you were a black man aged 20 to 30, half of you in the city were under criminal justice supervision. They were in prison, in jail, on parole, or on probation. This is one of the primary drivers of bad racial narratives and racial tension. So there is no way to contain what starts with the violence.
Janetta, what would you add to that?
Not just from a criminology vantage point, but also from a public health model. If you look at homicide as a type of injury, homicide is the leading cause of premature death among black males in Maryland and specifically in Baltimore, and thousands of years of life are being lost. 1,300 years of life were lost in 2013 because...
Lives shorter than one could have expected them to be.
Exactly. Because of homicide. And then if you were to focus it more even on homicides caused by firearm, that rate would go up. So the impact is very high when you look at the potential that there was for productive lives in these communities. You are losing not just one or two people, but if you look at the collective impact on the community, you are losing so many potential years of life.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Janetta Churchill, Research Associate at the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University, and David Kennedy of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City, the founder of Ceasefire. David, let me take a minute and ask you to give us a thumbnail description of Ceasefire and what it does.
Ceasefire is in some ways built on the facts on the ground that we've just been talking about. The worst thing that can happen in public safety terms in any community is to have these unconscionably high and sustained levels of really, really serious violence, and then everything else that we've been talking about that flows from it, including some things we haven't talked about, like the fact that it's very hard to get economic development in these places. You have impacts on employment. People are afraid to go to school. It just doesn't stop. The current version of Ceasefire in Baltimore began in West Baltimore about a year ago in the Western District. The Western District is persistently one of the most dangerous police zones in the city. And in this most dangerous place, it was a few dozen street groups, gangs, drug crews, and that sort of thing, with well under 1,000 people that were driving the overwhelming preponderance of the violence. The Western District is not dangerous. The Western District has a few dangerous people in it. And what Ceasefire does is focus on those groups. It gets law enforcement and social service providers and community people all on the same page. It begins direct communication with those groups, and basically the partnership says, we know who you are, we know what you're doing, we want you alive, we want to keep you alive, we want to keep you out of prison, we'd like to help you, and law enforcement is going to tell you ahead of time of the heightened legal consequences that will come if the violence doesn't stop. The intent is to make it very clear that the social standards in the community are for safety, that there's a way out for people who want a way out, and not to put everybody in jail, but to make it really clear that the violence will from now on be met with special consequences. And the result of that was that what we call group member involved violence, this core gang and drug crew violence, went down 80% in the Western District since we started in about June of last year.
On WIPR's Midday, Baltimore Police Commissioner Anthony Batts told Dan Rodericks that police metrics have been around since the 1920s and 30s, and the yearly count of homicides gets a lot of attention.
Baltimore, we were in the high 300s, and now we're down into the 200s, and we continue to drop. New York is another example. So policing is giving you exactly what you're measuring. You want more efficient policing, we become more efficient. You want to focus on homicide rates, we focus on homicide rates. And I think our metrics have to change because policing is not one-dimensional. It has a lot of different sides. When I walked in the door, what we focused on as a city was just the homicide rate.
David Kennedy, would you agree that the metrics need to change?
Of course they do. I mean, there isn't any one dimension that captures the full richness of any important social issue. In policing, a city that focuses exclusively on homicide can easily miss the much, much larger spectrum of people who survive serious violence and end up in wheelchairs and on walkers and with colostomy bags. It can miss people being afraid, not hurt, but terrified and unwilling to go outside. It can bring the homicide and the violence rate down and do it in a way that so alienates the neighborhood that you have an absolute crisis of legitimacy. Policing is, in fact, getting much, much better at grasping ways to be quite serious about tracking a wide range of things. So the commissioner's absolutely right.
I agree with David that it is a broader picture that needs to be painted than just looking at the homicide rate. In 2013, we saw property crimes go up by 6% and robbery rates go up by 4%.
What was happening to homicides that year?
There was actually an increase in that as well. But there are other types of crimes that are impacting people's quality of life across the city. And it's important to look at the impact that those types of crime are having on the way that we live our lives. If people, as he said, are afraid to come out of their homes, don't want to let their children play outside, they just want to be locked up, that is not a way for Baltimore to be vibrant. And I know that the mayor's very interested in bringing new families into Baltimore. We need to be able to be attractive and change that image that we have of people associating the wire with Baltimore City and crime being the only thing that people outside of the city want to associate with Baltimore.
You've given us a lot to think about. I thank you both. David Kennedy is director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. He started the program Ceasefire here in Baltimore. Janetta Churchill is a research associate at the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Just ahead, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Ann Tyler.